taking Britain
on some of legislation, and some of the legislation was supposed to deliberate and arrive at a conclusion to prepare a report to the House for the bills to be adopted by the House, to be approved by the House and referred to the President for signing into law. I need, therefore, all the people who are going to be presenting today to advise us what is the sense of the agency of the bill you are briefing us on. That's number one. Number two, what is the critical nature, the touching life kind of a thing, you know, of the bill that you are presenting to us, whether or not we need to process it and finish it by the end of the of the year. And you will know that next year is the election year. We have very limited time in the first 3 or 4 months that we'll be having in Parliament in the beginning of 2019. So it is on that basis that we think you need to advise us on the three important aspects that I would have referred to in my opening remarks. We're going to be starting with the legal advisor in Parliament on the powers, privileges and immunities of Parliament and the Provincial Legislature's Amendment Bill, Bill 18, 2018, which is the Section 75 Bill. Oh, Honourable Oliphant has just joined us. Honourable Oliphant is a permanent delegate from the Northern Cape. Over to you then, ladies, from Legal Services. I need you to be really very economic with time. At most, how much time do you need?
I think about 30 minutes.
30? I can.
I'll try to do within 20.
Within 20, please.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Dasha Kaplan, and I'm from the Parliamentary Legal Services Office. I have with me my colleague, Mr. Anne Isaac. She and I both were involved and tasked with dealing with this bill in the National Assembly.
What are we going to do for the nation? Okay, it was an oversight on my part, but they will do so as they start their presentation. Thank you for that. We can proceed.
But Ms. Isaac was also involved in the litigation of this matter when it went to the Constitutional Court. So while I'll make the presentation, both she and I will field any questions from the members. Now, I did circulate a PowerPoint presentation. I understand from Gershwin that copies have been made. I also understand that a copy of the judgment was circulated, the principal act as well as the bill, because I think having the principal act and the bill before you while I go through the presentation will just make it, will just be a little bit easier for referencing purposes. Now, the purpose of my presentation is to brief this committee on the bill, which is the powers and privileges and immunities of Parliament and provincial legislatures amendment bill, which was introduced as a committee bill in the National Assembly. The structure that my presentation will take will be that I'll first present a very brief background as to why this was introduced as a committee bill. Then I'll go into the very brief summary of the relevant constitutional judgment and highlight its key findings so that it creates the basis for understanding why the amendments in the bill were made, and then proceed by clause content briefing of the bill. Now, as you may know, on the 18th of March, the Constitutional Court handed down a judgment in the Democratic Alliance versus the Speaker of the NA and others, in which it declared Section 11 of the Powers and Privileges Act are constitutionally invalid to the extent that that provision applied to members. And the ambit of that provision was that it curtailed a member's right to parliamentary privilege of free speech, which is protected in the House and the committee in terms of Section 58(1) and 71(1) of the Constitution. Now, at the moment, Section 11 of the Act reads, a person who creates or takes part in any disturbance in the precinct. And I just want to say that in terms of the definition of the word precinct in the Act, it includes the chambers, it includes the gardens, it includes the corridors in Parliament, but it also includes the houses and the committees where committee meetings are held. So what this section read is that any person who creates a disturbance in any part of the precinct can be arrested on the order of the Speaker for creating that disturbance. That means that the section, the way it read, applied to members as well, and this then the court had said infringed upon parliamentary privilege which is protected in the House and the committee. The CC had stated that the omission of the word other than a member in that section was inconsistent with the Constitution. The Concord then confirmed that that section must be read as if the word other than a member are included after the word person, so that that section is not applicable to members when they create a disturbance in the precinct. Now, in order to address the findings of this judgment, on 19th May 2016, the NA took a resolution that an ad hoc committee be established to review the Act, taking into account this particular Concord judgment and to bring the Act in line with developments relating to parliamentary powers and privileges, and then to introduce a bill into the NA. But the ad hoc committee also then took this opportunity to look at other provisions of the Act that might possibly have required amendments beyond the implications of the judgment. And the nature of these amendments, as I go through the content of the bill, you will see are largely corrections, or they're clearing up ambiguous or vague provisions of the Act. So following its establishment, the committee, the ad hoc committee, then proceeded to develop a committee bill, and after completing all the relevant processes such as publication of the draft bill in a gazette for public comment, involving public participation, also requesting input via email from relevant officials within Parliament who work regularly with the bill, as well as from legal advisors from the provincial legislature. But might I add that very little input was received from those officials and the provincial officials. And after conducting deliberations, that particular ad hoc committee introduced the bill in the NA on the 6th of June this year and adopted it on the 28th of August, after which it was then transmitted to the NCLP for concurrence. Now, before I deal with the content of the bill clause by clause, we thought it necessary to just provide this committee with a very brief summary of the judgment. And I do apologize up front if I'm going to labor too much on some certain points, but I'm sure you're all familiar with what the court has said. This particular application was brought to the Constitutional Court as a confirmatory application. By that I mean the applicants approached the Constitutional Court to confirm an order that was made by the Western Cape High Court, which had declared Section 11 of the Act to be constitutionally invalid, as they too were of the opinion that it curtailed a member's privilege of free speech in Parliament by providing for the arrest of members who create or take part in a disturbance. Very briefly, the High Court had held that the word person in Section 11, it was reasonable to construe that that word person included reference to a member of Parliament. The High Court also said that the definition of disturbance is so wide that it does encompass the robust debates that are characteristic of parliamentary discourse. And the court then said that this wide definition definitely diminished or took away or detracted from the members' parliamentary privilege of free speech. The High Court then said that Section 11 as it was invalid to the extent that it permitted members to be arrested for conduct that is protected in the Constitution, and that also that members are not liable to civil or criminal proceedings, arrest, imprisonment, or damages for anything that they have said in the Houses or committees. In hearing this application, the Constitutional Court considered four main issues. The first question the court considered was whether Section 11 of the Act did infringe the privilege of freedom of speech of members of Parliament. The Concord also looked at the definition of disturbance and looked at what the reach of disturbance as it was defined in the Act was and what actually constitutes interference and disruption. The court looked to see whether the word person in Section 11 of the Act included a reference to a member, and if it indeed do so, whether Section 11 then infringed upon parliamentary privilege of speech guaranteed in the Constitution. The court then also looked to see to what extent and to by what means may this privilege be limited. Now, before I go into the CC's findings, the next two slides basically provide the actual wording of Section 58, which relates to privilege in the NA, and the next slide 10 refers to Section 71, which relates to the privilege of members in the NCLP. Now, just to note that the same content relating to provincial legislatures is also found in Section 117 of the Constitution. But just to save time, I'm not going to go through the constitutional provisions. Going back to the Constitutional Court's findings, the first question as to whether the word person in Section 11 of the Act included a member, what the court noted was that the Act does not define the term person. And the Act and the court held that this word person in the Act largely seems to include a reference to the member. And by illustrating this point, the Constitutional Court referred to various sections in the Act to illustrate this. For example, the court said in Section 4.2 of the Act, which refers to action being taken when there's immediate danger to the life or safety of any person, the purpose of this section is meant to avert any harm to whomever may be at risk. So the word person then must logically be a reference to a member as well. The court then held that the word person does not include the member only in instances where this is quite plain from the text of the provision. And it doesn't include reference to a member where the provision in the Act specifically excludes reference to a member. So there are provisions in the Act that will start off by saying a person other than a member. Then from that wording, it is clear that that provision doesn't refer to a member, but it includes a person who's not a member. And then after looking at what the purpose of Section 11 of the Act was, the court concluded that from the context of that particular provision, the word person in Section 11 also referred to a member. With regard to whether Section 11 limited parliamentary free speech and the immunities of members contained in Section 58, the court held that Section 11 as it was allows for the arrest of the member who creates a disturbance on the precinct, including whether that disturbance is in the House or in a committee meeting. This section allows for that arrest of the member, possibly followed by detention and prosecution. And because it allowed for this particular instance, it constituted an infringement of parliamentary free speech and also infringed the immunities that members are protected from. In other words, members are protected from criminal and civil proceedings, from arrest, for imprisonment, for anything that they say in a House or a committee meeting. The court also noted that while parliamentary free speech is subject to rules and orders, which means that parliamentary free speech can be limited, but only in rules and orders, the court held that the immunities that are available to a member are absolute. They cannot be limited. The court then looked to see to what extent may parliamentary free speech be limited. The court noted that the privilege contained in Section 58 and 71 can never go so far as to give members a license to disrupt proceedings that it would be incapacitated from conducting its business. These sections make freedoms of speech subject to the rules and orders envisaged in Section 57 and 70. Now, Section 57 and 70 allows for Parliament, for the NA as well as the NCLP, to make their own rules regarding internal proceedings. And what the court said is that the freedom of speech protected in Section 58 can be limited by rules and orders made by Parliament, meaning that only the rules and orders may limit parliamentary free speech. An act of parliament, like the Powers and Privileges Act, cannot limit the free speech that is protected in Section 58 and Section 71. The court then looked at what the reach of disturbance was as it was defined in the Act, and noted that the word disturbance is defined as any act which interferes with or disrupts, which is likely to interfere with or disrupt the proceedings of Parliament. The court then said it cannot be all conduct that would amount to interference or disruption. To warrant removal from the House or a committee, the interference or disruption must go beyond what is considered the natural consequence of robust debate. So what the court said is that the interference and disruption that may be sufficient for removal of a member must be of a nature that hamstrings or incapacitates or does not allow Parliament to continue with its business. In other words, there must be no anticipation of resumption of business within a reasonable time. Then in the Crown Court, there was also the contention that Section 11 of the Act is not a rule or order of the NA, and therefore it is also constitutionally invalid because it limits, it's an act that limits parliamentary free speech, where the constitutional provisions clearly say that parliamentary free speech can only be subject to the rules and orders of the NA and the NCLP. This then raised the question as to whether an instrument which is not in the rule and order may be employed to limit free speech. And what the court said here is that the constitutional provisions of Section 58 and 71 is very plain. It makes freedom of speech in the NA subject to rules and orders and nothing else, meaning it can only be limited in the rule. Limiting the freedom by an act of parliament is at variance with the constitution and must be constitutionally impermissible. The next slide then just looked at other supporting provisions for the court's conclusion that parliamentary free speech can only be limited by rules and orders, but for the sake of time I don't think it's necessary to go through this particular slide. But what the court then ordered was that Section 11 of the Act is constitutionally invalid to the extent that it applies to members. In order to cure this constitutional defect, the court thought it fit and proper to read in the word other than a member after the word person in Section 11 to ensure that the section does not apply to members. However, Section 11 will still continue to apply to non-members and other members of the public, where the speaker then has the power to order the removal and arrest of members of the public creating a disturbance on the precinct. The declaration of constitutional invalidity was not suspended, Chairperson, and this is where we speak about the urgency. So the read-in provision became effective immediately. They didn't give Parliament a deadline by which to correct this defect. So we're not chasing any court deadline by which to pass this bill, as you would find in other constitutional court judgments, where the court would say Parliament is given 24 months to correct the defect. The next slide then just provides how the read-in provision would read, and the underlined words say, other than a member, would mean that the court reads this as an insertion into Section 11. Slide 19 just quickly recaps the key findings, where basically I just want to highlight that the word person in the Act always includes a reference to a member unless the context dictates otherwise, or the provision itself says it doesn't refer to a member. And that the other main finding is that parliamentary free speech, which is protected in Section 58 and 71 of the Constitution, can be limited because they are subject only to rules and orders, but they may not be limited in an act of parliament. And it is against these findings that the Ad Hoc Committee reviewed the Act and proposed the amendments that it did. Yeah. Now, if I can maybe at this point just ask members to also look at the bill which is before them, so that presentation makes easier reference to them. You will see that on page, well, not the cover page, the next page, the bill starts off with the long title, and the long title merely sets out the purpose of the bill and what the bill seeks to do. It is a short summary describing the content of the bill. I'm not going to read it out because as we go through the content of the bill, it's exactly what would be encapsulated there. Now you will notice that this amendment bill has a preamble. And the preamble refers to the key findings of the CC judgment. Now, it is not a requirement that laws have preambles. They are included to set the background to the law, the legal basis of the act, and the reason for its adoption. And usually amendment bills are not bills that have preambles. But they do, we have found precedents where amendment bills do have preambles if it's going to assist the reader with an explanation as to why the bill was, while the amendment bill was prepared and adopted. And it was thought necessary to include this in the bill merely to highlight the key findings of the Constitutional Court findings up front. Other examples where this has been done in an amendment bill where a preamble has been included has been the Criminal Law, Sexual Offences and Related Matters Amendment Bill of 2015, which was also a bill that was drafted to address a Constitutional Court judgment. And we thought precedent is there, and that is why. But what's important to note is that the preamble that's here in this amendment bill will not form part of the principal act. The preamble here explains why this amendment was brought, but it doesn't get incorporated or in the consolidated version now of the principal act. Then I think the crux of the amendment which addresses the Constitutional Court's finding can be found in Clause 1, which amends Section 1 of the Act, which is your definition sections of the Act. And the amendment here is to the definition of disturbance. And the manner in which the definition of disturbance has been amended is to ensure that any act committed by a member in exercising his privilege in the House or a committee is excluded from this definition. So in other words, the conduct that is protected in the Constitution will not form part of the definition of disturbance. Now remember we said that in terms of Section 58.1 and 71.1, members have freedom of speech in the House and committees only. And then, for whatever they say in the House and committee, members are protected from any civil or criminal proceedings or from any arrest or imprisonment. So parliamentary free speech is only protected in the House and the committees, and it can only be limited by rules and orders. So what the amended definition of disturbance does, it no longer includes an act by a member which is an act exercising his or her privilege in the House. So if I can say it another way, this amended definition excludes those acts which amount to freedom of speech in the House, Council or Committee, thereby protecting parliamentary free speech. The next amendment is to Clause 2, which is amendment to Section 7(f)(i) of the Act. And the reason this was amended is because the reading of Section 7(f)(i) was felt to be quite vague and ambiguous, and it was not clear as to what the word persons was being referred to. So if I can just maybe read what 7(f)(i) currently states in the Act. It says, a person may not fail or refuse to comply with an instruction by a duly authorized staff member regarding the presence of persons at a particular meeting. And it wasn't clear now what does it mean. So this is now made clearer that the word, that no person may fail or refuse to comply with a lawful instruction regarding that person's presence at a particular meeting. Clause 3 amends Section 11 by providing for the Constitutional Court reading provision. So by providing for that, Section 11 will still allow for the removal and arrest of a person from the public who creates or takes part in a disturbance anywhere on the precinct, but it will not apply to a member. The next amendment is Clause 4, which amends Section 12F of the Act by merely inserting the word or at the end of the section. Now the reason we did that is for consistency in the drafting of the Act, because there are many sections in the Act which contain lists where the word or the word and is omitted, while in other sections where lists are presented, these words are included. For example, Sections 2 and 8 will have these words included at the end of the drop-down list. Now, the words or and are merely conjunctions, and they serve as a connective purpose, and also gives the reader clarity on whether all of the elements in the list must be fulfilled or imposed or just one of them. So in this clause, by inserting the word or at the end of section 12F, makes it clear that either of these penalties may be imposed and not all of them at one go. Clause 5 amends section 22 of the Act by replacing the word in with the word for, so that the phrase now reads liable for damages, which is a more widely used phrase in legislation. At the moment, section 22 reads that no person is liable in damages. The only other time we saw this example where the phrase in damages is used is in a very old 1963 Act, the fencing legislation, and we just thought, let's amend the wording to what is more commonly used in legislation. Again, clause 6 is about inserting the conjunction or at the end of section 23.2a to distinguish the different alternatives between paragraph A and B. Clause 7 amends section 24a by replacing the word person with the word member or that delegate to make it clear that the word person there refers to member or delegate. So it was just taking from the Constitutional Court judgment, it was felt that where it can be said that that is just a member or just a delegate, that you then change the word person to reflect that. Clause 25.2 is an amendment. Clause 8 amends section 25.2 by inserting the word agreed before the word person over there. And the reason for this, that it was not clear as to who the word person in section 25.2 refers to. And in fact, the question was the word referring to member? Was it to the witness? Was it to the agreed person? And after we consulted with NA staff, they made it clear that the person that's being referred to is the agreed person. So it's to allow the agreed person to record a response when a statement against him or her is made. Okay, I'm almost done.
Enjoy the
time. I'm not too far off. Clause 9 amends section 28, which deals with the application of the Act to provincial legislatures. Now, if you look at section 28 of the Act, this is the section that makes this entire Act applicable to provincial legislatures. So what section 28.1 does, it lists all the sections of the Act that will apply to the provincial legislatures with the necessary changes. Section 28.2 then indicates how certain terms in those sections must be construed when referring to a provincial legislature. For example, it says that Parliament or a House refer to in other sections of the Act when referring to a provincial legislature must be construed as a reference to a provincial legislature, and so forth. Now, as you know, we changed the definition of disturbance to exclude the protected conduct that members have in the NA and the NCLP. I also mentioned that section 117 of the Constitution gives the same privileges to members of a provincial legislature. So what clause 9 does is it inserts a new paragraph G to section 28 to indicate that the term disturbance used in those sections when referring to a provincial legislature must be construed as excluding an act committed by a member of a provincial legislature or the province's permanent delegate to the NCLP in the exercise of that person's privilege contemplated in 117. So it just makes the definition that we've now amended also applicable to provincial legislatures where those members exercise that right in a provincial legislature. Clause 9 also adds a new subsection 3 to section 28. And this was in relation to a concern that was expressed by a particular province when we received certain input that said that it's not always practical for small legislatures to establish a standing committee to deal with disciplinary issues. And section 12.2 of this Act requires that a standing committee be established to deal with matters dealt with in section 12. So in order to avoid conflict of interest, they say the membership of committees in small legislatures often change, each time a disciplinary matter is heard. So what the new subsection 3 does is to merely provide that for purposes of section 12.2, a provincial legislature may choose to either appoint a standing committee or establish an ad hoc committee. And this was as a result of comment that we did get from a provincial legislature. Then clause 10 inserts a new subsection into section 28 into the Act, and this is your new section 28A, which is to deal with who has control over the precincts of a provincial legislature. Now the reason this was done is that section 3 of the Act currently states that the Speaker and the Chairperson exercise joint control over the precinct on behalf of Parliament. But no such provision existed for provincial legislatures in regard to their precincts. And we heard from the provinces that often provincial legislatures are housed in the same building as the executive, which then requires them to enter into all sorts of agreements as to who controls which part of the building. So what Section 28 is about is to expressly indicate that the Speaker of a provincial legislature exercises control and authority over the precinct on behalf of that provincial legislature. Again, Clause 11 is merely an amendment to Section 29.2A, which inserts a conjunction at the end of that section. Clause 12 is again an amendment to Section 50, subparagraph A, to make it clear who person is, so we replace the word person there with the word member. And then Clause 13 is an amendment to the long title of the Act, of the Pipler Act, in the short title. Now the reason we did this is because if you look at the Act, on the first page of the Act of the Gazetted Version, it says Act 4 of 2004. But when we look at the long title of the Act reads that this Act is called the Powers and Privileges Act of 2003. So that is often an oversight that happens if a bill was passed by the end of this year, but only signed next year, then there's sometimes that error kicks in respect of the year. So all we are doing there is amending the short title to align with the actual number and year that the Act is actually signed. And then Clause 14 provides for the short title of this amendment bill. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Madam. I decided to give you more time because this deals directly with members of Parliament themselves, therefore they've got an interest. We know now that you did receive comments from provincial legislatures. And this is the first briefing on this bill, on this amendment before this committee. And I allowed you to go to town on the judgment because I think it forms in the main the basis of the amendment or the appeal of this law, which is what's very important for us. And maybe I should also share with honourable members that a notice for public comments has been issued by the committee on this particular amendment, and the closing date is coming on the 9th of November, which is sometime next week. I am sharing this information so that members, when they do their comments, they should know that we only commenting with this process on this particular bill, and we're still going to have future engagement throughout the processes as outlined in the framework. I shall now give. Say again. Yeah, it's a public comment, it's a call for public comment. Private persons, organizations, companies can do comment. Can I now take hands? Honorable Oliphant was first, then I will take Honorable Michalakis, then Honorable Mokwili, in that order. Honorable Oliphant, you can go. Oh.
Thank you. Chair, I just wanted a curious thing because that legislature that I come from, it's only the Speaker and the deputy speaker. Now here in parliament, it's speaker and they go, they are almost 5 points. I'm just saying. Now in other legislatures, it's only the control is being made by the speaker and the deputy speaker. But I want to clear about the chair, because in the legislatures, there are chair of chairs. Also, to help taking control of. Now, where does the bill come in there?
Honorable Mikala, please.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just some clarity out. It's probably going to be a stupid question for which I apologize in advance. My understanding is that the security services, they fall directly under the authority of the speaker and the chairperson jointly. They are responsible for, if there are any arrests in terms of the legislation, they are responsible for that. I just want confirmation of that. If an arrest is made in terms of this bill, it must be made by the parliamentary security services, not the police. I just want confirmation of that. And if that is so, I know it doesn't necessarily relate to the legislation, but does it not then, under this legislation, make sense to have, instead of police presence as security on the parliamentary precinct, to have parliamentary security services guarding the gates of parliament and making sure that security measures are in place? I just want you to know where exactly the police service fits in, because it cannot be that they can have any authority in terms of this legislation, of course, due to the separation of powers principle. So I just want clarity on exactly where they fit in, because my logic would say that Parliament as a whole should then be secured by parliamentary protection services instead of the South African Police Service as well. Just some clarity on that. So my apologies, it's just a stupid question.
Another Mokwele?
I've been No, my thanks for the presentation. I want them to finish. Can I?
Yes.
Okay, all right. I wanted you to finish with your colleagues. No, my first question will be on the word disturbance. You repeated the word disturbance, and then. I want to check legally when we say something is of disturbance. How then do you distinguish that? Secondly, it's about freedom of speech by members and freedom of activities within the precincts of parliament by members. Vis-a-vis the rules, because in some instances you will find that I heard you saying the CC judgment that legislatures and parliament must develop rules that will deal with other matters that relate to discipline in any way. Now, I want to check with you when you were drafting the bill based on the court judgment, were you also bearing in mind the present rules that are applied to by Parliament to check whether this rule does it align to what judgment has said, or is it constitutionally aligned, is it legally aligned to what is needed in terms of the freedom of activity and freedom of speech by members? And again, I might be out of order, Chair, you'll tell if I'm out of port. Currently, as we speak, there is a court judgment that says this, the act itself, it's unconstitutional. That means then that Parliament is restricted from referring to the act itself when they maybe want to act on something or act on another member. Is it permissible for Parliament to still stick on the act or what? Thank you very much. I hope it's in order, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable. That's one take from me. You make reference to the fact that the legislature should have commented on this, notwithstanding the fact that as a late committee of the NSOP, we still have to engage into our own processes independent from the portfolio committee. I just needed to know how many of the legislatures would have made a comment on this, because it impacts also on them. Over to you then.
I'll address some of the questions and then hand over to my colleague who will address the others. With regard to the question about what about the chair of chairs, I said I only remember that
step out. She will read the minutes.
Okay,
let's continue.
But nevertheless, I mean, what the Act says is that it's the head of it's the PO in Parliament that exercise control of the meeting, and then similarly this would then be the presiding officer, which would be the speaker in a provincial legislature. So that's what the Act makes. It doesn't make provision for a chair or other designations to have that kind of exercise and control of the meeting. My colleague will address the issue of the security services under the Martin Luther. I'm going to then go over to what disturbance means and how do we distinguish it. I think I'm going to go right back to what the court has said. The court has said that the definition of disturbance is very wide. And therefore it cannot be all conduct that amounts to disturbance. What the court said that for the conduct to warrant removal, or for the disturbance to warrant removal, the interference or disruption must go beyond what is the natural consequence. And the interference and disruption must be of such a nature that it actually stops Parliament from conducting its business. So there must be no anticipation or resumption of business within a reasonable time. Now obviously this will then determine on what exactly is happening, where it's happening, is it causing such a disturbance that one cannot hold your meeting. So in those instances, but the rules will need to define and elaborate on those issues. As to whether we check the rules when drafting this act, or drafting this bill was in response to a judgment that dealt with a particular section of the act. And what we had to do was to ensure that the act no longer regulates any freedom of speech in the House or the committee. And it was against that background that we tried to remedy provisions in the Act. With regard to the rule, it wasn't part of our task to look to see whether the current rules that regulate removal are actually constitutional or not. I think that's a different exercise, but I do know subsequent to this judgment, the rules regulating removal have been redrafted. And it appears here, I think, in Chapter 5 of the 9th edition for the NA. As far as the NCLP rules are concerned, there is Chapter 5 that also deals with removal of a member or ordering that the member leave the chambers of the NCLP. Whether or not the exercise of reviewing the NCLP rules has commenced or not is that I'm not informed. But it may well be that the NCLP rules will have to be amended to accommodate the judgment or to expand on the judgment. But certainly in the NA, we have the NA staff sitting there who would give the input as to the extent of what the rules now do in relation to the judgment. With regard to whether Parliament can still stick to this, and Honourable Member, only one section of this act is declared unconstitutional. So the rest of the act still applies. And so it's only that section that was declared unconstitutional. The rest of the act still applies, I mean, following that judgment. Chairperson Esther Harney, legislators gave input. As I mentioned, we had ourselves emailed the legal advisors from all the provinces, and when we had a litigation meeting on another issue with all our legal advisors, we had given them the bill at the time the NA called for comments. Very limited input was received. I think only about 4 of the provinces had given input. So that is why this is another opportunity for provincial legislators to provide the input into the bill. I'll now hand over to my colleague.
Thank you, Chair Bundan. Just to elaborate on what Ms. Kaplan said regarding the application of the Act, because there was a reading provision into the Section 11, it means that the Act is effectively amended. So as it applies, Section 11 excludes members. So the Constitutional Court didn't require Parliament to come back and change it by reading in that means from that date that Section has been effectively amended and that Act applies now to Parliament. With regard to the issue of security service and the role of Parliament's protection services versus the police, they both function in coordination. Parliament's security services has a policy and they have specific roles and they deal with internal security of Parliament. In terms of the Act, there is a specific role for the security services in Section 4 of the Act. So the police will continue performing a policing function. So in terms of Section 4, a member of the security service may enter upon or remain in the precinct for the purpose of performing any policing function or performing any policing function in the precinct only with the permission and authority of the speaker and chairperson. So they obviously the speaker and the chairperson have given them authority to remain on the precinct, and I'm not too knowledgeable about the arrangements, but there is obviously an arrangement there. Secondly, in terms of Section 4.2 of the Act, when there's any danger on the precinct, and the police don't even need to get the permission of the speaker or the chairperson, there's a threat to life or some other danger, then they can come in and perform their normal policing functions. So the role of the police to maintain to conduct their normal policing function remains, but they work in coordination with Parliament's protective services with regard to the internal security.
Thank you. Honourable members, can I first allow new hands, then I will consider the follow-up if there are any. First noted the hand of Honourable Professor Matime. Honourable Mukwili needed to make a follow-up.
Yes.
On the two hands. Honourable Mkhalaki? The follow-up. Okay then. Can we agree that this is the last batch of hands on this one? Thank you very much.
Chair, thank you very much. I would like to know, in a situation where these presiding officers, for one reason or other, are not able to perform those functions and they've delegated, I just wonder what the force of delegation implies. If this particular member is delegated to hold the fort in the absence of the presiding officer, now what functions does that person qualify to perform? That's my first point. My second point, Chairperson, through you. How can I put it? I just want to know whether the principle of a law applying only after it has been signed. After it has been signed, then we follow. We operate according to that one. Until it is signed, the old one obtains, because there must be no vacuum. I want to check whether my understanding is in order, Chairperson. So that we don't say, because they're still working on this piece of legislation, so the old legislation no longer applies. What's the situation? Thank you.
Did you get that?
Yes.
Honorable Mukwele?
No, thank you very much. Thanks for the response. And I'm glad that you did mention that NA's rule speaks direct to the Constitutional Court judgment. So, legal, I want to check with you that if ever a presiding officer or officer presiding in the NCOP happens to then imply the rules of another house, which is the NA, into the NCOP, is it permissible? Because what I know, I sit in rules committee, we are still struggling to conclude the rules of the NCOP, and we are now at the fourth term, which I think is our last term now, at the fifth parliament, but we are still struggling to deal with that thing of maybe taking members out. You might know that most members have been forcefully or I want her to understand. Dr. Mateme, can you assist? Not forcefully, but do us a favor, doctor.
Now you are taking over my meeting. And you are creating disturbance now. You are making me be tempted to eject you.
Most members have been manhandled. And there is no rule in the NCOP that allows the NCOP to perform that. So is it legal? Or is it permissible, or is it illegal to do that?
Honorable Mr. Galagis?
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to point clarity. From your response given with regard to Section 4, then, security services, from the definitions that I see in the bill, the security services that they refer to in Section 4, in other words, they mean the Defence Forces, the Police Service, am I right? And then, just with regards to the consultation with the provinces, I just need a bit more clarity on exactly how far you went in including them, because in my opinion, if they've already been given extensive chance to make an input, then we're going to, especially this late in the term, it's going to perhaps be a futile exercise. So I just need clarity on to what extent have they been approached, and does it make sense to then go a second time, or are only four provinces likely going to respond again? Thank you, Chairperson.
Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Question with regard to the question of delegation of authority to impossible to see chairperson in absence or the speaker's absence, the rules provide for the appointment of an acting chairperson. So in terms of the NA rules, in terms of the NCO rules, so in terms of a rule 10 of the NCOP rules, it says that an acting chairperson may be appointed when the chairperson is unable to perform her duty. And in terms of 10.2 of the rules, it says that acting chairperson has the responsibilities, powers, and functions of the chairperson. So they will actually lead and perform all the functions that are necessary. With regard to the members' questions regarding the security services, yes, in terms of the definition of security service in the Act, it's in terms of Section 119 of the Constitution, and it includes the Defence Force and the Intelligence Service.
with regards to honourable member about whether old legislation or whether this new legislation applies, this bill is not an act yet. So it's still in the making. It hasn't been signed, so it's not a law yet that can be enforced. Until that happens, it's the current act that will apply. As far as the
except for those patients that were
and the lead-in provision of the court will apply in that section.
Yes.
So that was effective immediately upon the order being made. With regard to whether it's permissible to apply the MA's rule into the NCLP, these are two separate houses. My view is that one needs to have separate rules, which they are. One cannot, I don't think one can apply MA rules to the NCLP, but the NCLP rules in Chapter 5 does deal with a member being ordered to leave, and so that can be used when a disturbance has been created. It also deals with the decorum of the house, so these are certainly rules that can be utilized when a disturbance is created in there. How far did we include the legislature? It was at two stages of the drafting. Initially, when the ad hoc committee was established and we were still trying to determine the terms of reference and how far this amendment bill should go, I, who was responsible of with the drafting, and together with my colleague who is no longer here, we sent emails to all the legal advisors as well as officials within Parliament who work with this piece of legislation to tell us what are the challenges with this act, is there anything you feel is not working in terms of this act? Do you want any vague provisions to be challenged? So that was the first call we made to the legal advisors. We're very limited in the second, to the legal advisors and provinces. The second call was made when the NA published the bill for comments. We gave out the bill to all the legal advisors from the provinces that were present at our meeting. Again, it didn't yield much comment. But the comments or the input that we did receive, we did address by including those amendments in the bill. I don't think it would be a futile exercise to call on the provinces again, because this is the NCLP's public involvement or participation process. And whatever yields from that, I mean, we'll definitely consider.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, can we close this one?
Yes.
I think this was our first fight as this committee. We still have future engagement on this one. Can we now take item 4, a briefing on the Independent Police Investigation Directorate Amendment Bill? I'm told Mr. Prince is going to do that on behalf of Mr. Buchmann, who is the chair of the Portfolio Committee on Police. Who is Mr. Prince? It's you. Yeah, it's fine. Thank you very much for coming. You helped us a lot, ne? Thank you very much. I could see you are pursuing a personal case here.
I'm going to need money.
Mr. Prince, if you can be quick, please. We have time pressure here.
And members. I take it the members have received copies of the presentation of audit. Just a quick correction, it is the Independent Police Investigative Directorate amendable. I see the word investigative was left out of the presentation. There you go. Just a bit of background. The Constitutional Court declared a number of provisions invalid to the extent that they authorized the Minister of Police to suspend, take disciplinary steps pursuant to suspension or remove from office the Executive Director of IPED. Specifically, these sections were section 638 and 66 of the IPED Act, section 16A(1), 16B, 17(1) and 17(2) of the Public Service Act, and Regulation 13 of the IFED regulation that deals with the operation of IFED. The court directed Parliament to cure the defect in the legislation within 24 months from the date of that order. Chair, the following two slides deals with the process in the Portfolio Committee. I don't really need to go through that, that is a normal process. If we skip to slide 5, we deal with the bill. So the bill seeks to amend the IFED. It's a very short bill, Chair, it's only got two substantive clauses. It seeks to amend the IFED Act in order to give respect to the Constitutional Court judgment in the Robert McBride matter. It does so by, amongst other things, providing parliamentary oversight in relation to the suspension, discipline, or removal of the Executive Director of IFED. Clause 2 in particular seeks to amend Section 6 of the IFED Act by repealing subsection 6, which deals with the removal of the Executive Director. That was the impugned provision in the Constitutional Court judgment. Clause 2 of the bill, just to pause there, members will remember that in the McBride matter, the court did provide certain reading provisions. And so the Portfolio Committee, when they decided to develop a committee bill, concentrated on those reading provisions and to make that part of the IFED Act now. And so Clause 2 mirrors those reading provisions that the court provided to the IFED in the McBride matter. So it mirrors Section 17, capital D-A, subsections 3 to 7 of the South African Police Services Act, as per the court's judgment in McBride. And Clause 2 proposes a new section to provide for the Executive Director's removal from office. It also provides that the Executive Director may only be removed by a resolution of the National Assembly. It further provides that the Minister may suspend the Executive Director after the Committee of the National Assembly has started proceedings to remove him or her. But it confirms that the Minister must remove the Executive Director after the National Assembly has adopted the resolution to that effect. The clause further grants the Minister the discretion to allow the Executive Director on his or her request to vacate office earlier. And then lastly, that clause says that the Executive Director, if he or she wants to vacate office, must send his or her request to the Minister at least 6 months before the date on which he or she wishes to vacate the office. And the last clause deals with the short title of the bill. As you can see, it says very short bill. It simply was developed to take into account the Constitutional Court order and to almost codify, for lack of a better word, the provisions that were mentioned, the reading provisions that were mentioned in the McBride matter, and to insert those as amendments into the IFED Act. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Prince. I think now it's actually a blessing in disguise that Mr. McBride himself decided to apologize. he has got vested interest. It would have been a little bit problematic for me for him to make a comment on this one. And his office is here. Okay, let's allow you to comment first before members come in. Alfred, do you want to comment? Sorry, I must switch mine off before yours goes off.
Thank you. Wonderful, Chair. I think before I make a comment on behalf of ICES and the Executive Director, I would like to know what it is that the Chair would like me to comment on the bill as has been presented by Mr. Prince.
We are putting me into a corner now.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay, comment on the bill as presented, yeah.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, as you've indicated, I am representing Mr. McBride and I could have represented Mr. And the stance of IPEP is that we are requesting, or we are coming from a premise where we're saying the IPEP is not satisfied with the amendment as brought forth today. The reason for that is that the IPEP is well aware of the amendment that is supposed to be done after the Constitutional Court judgment. But IPEP is also the opinion that in order for us to be able to discharge our mandate fully and correctly, the Act will have to be amended in its entirety. An example that can be given, for instance, in how our trying to render services to the public is hamstrung is the instance where we've had high-profile investigations that have been started by the ICIG. And as a result of those high-profile investigations, we had counter-investigations that came as a result of these high-profile investigations. The counter-investigations were coming from the side of the citizen system. And nowhere in the Act previously, without if the committee bill continues as is, and some of these issues are not dealt with, IPEP cannot discharge its mandate correctly. So now, in this instance, what happens is that the bill does not deal with instances where there is counter-investigation from members of staff that are being investigated by the ICIG.
Yeah.
The ICIG in section 29, if I'm not mistaken, deals with an instance where an investigator has a conflict of interest when we are carrying out an investigation. That investigator must declare that they have a conflict of interest. And this is not contained in the SAS-Act. But as a result, members of the SAPS who are then being investigated by the ICIG are then able to do these counter-investigations. The IPIG Act in Section 4 as well deals with instances where members of other institutions are obligated to assist the IPIG in conducting its services. But this has not protected us. That is the one example here. There are a number of examples where we are hamstrung in determining our mandate. And if the IPIG or if a bill is going to continue as a committee bill, we are still going to be in a stance where we still need the entire bill to be amended. Earlier on, I think when the chair was opening, you requested that we indicate the importance and how we would want, I don't know whether I'm quoting the chair correctly, but how we would want the process going forth with regard to this particular, to what the bill that I involved in front of the committee. I think it's also the opinion that this is a very, very important bill. And if proceeding as just a committee bill is just not sufficient. I think a further important point is the fact that we were supposed to have amended the Act by the 5th of September. And even though it was shortened and made into a committee bill, it has yet to be finalized. And the IPEP would suggest that if we are proceeding with extending the time that the bill is going to be finalized, it would also be better to then take into consideration all the amendments that have been worked on between the CST and the IPEP team, where we dealt with the amendments in their entirety. So if we are extending the period of amendment, it would serve IPEP better, it would serve the country as a whole better, for the whole IPEP Act to be amended, to take into consideration those sections that are not in line with us being able to discharge our constitutional mandate properly. Perhaps I should rest this in our chair.
Okay. The public comments, the Court for Public Comments gives a deadline for the 2nd of November. We most probably going to be extending it. Do you want to do a substantive submission
yes.
as IPT?
Yes.
The chairperson wanted to, I actually wanted to start by saying is that we have seen that there was the advert for submissions, and it is until the 2nd of September. And the chair is now saying it will be extended.
Probably.
The IPID and also the civilian secretariat on service who were assisting us in the amendments would make submissions to the commission.
Thank you very much for that. Civilian Secretary, do you want to comment?
No, just like to say that I concur with what my colleague has said, and we will submit our submission together with the date that is determined by the staff.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We've already started the counting. Sorry for that. At this point, we were not involved in the bill itself, but and I also don't have any mandate to comment on it.
Okay, that's fair enough. Honourable members, can we take hands? Can I start with the members who have not spoken? Honorable Quimby, Honorable Wana, Honorable Oliphant, and Dr. Matime. In that order.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. This is a very important topic. Our Chairperson, I think the country at large, or the community at large, I want to say the independent police directorate is independent. Therefore, the act must make sure that there is not interference from the police or either anywhere. Because these people, and I like that we say they must account to Parliament, but we need more that gives them an independence, as this mentioned by the member of the IP. Chairperson, really, we were here when the case of Makorat. And I think even the community, we know that people are talking about corruption within the police. And we know that also the ICIC members are coming from police, others. And therefore, we must start. Make sure that more given power of being independent. Like, for instance, section, what is it? Madonna and Allah. They are independent. And the court said they must.
Public protector.
Sorry? What is it?
Continue.
So,
Chapter 9
Constitution.
Chapter 9 Institution.
They must be at least push to close to those people, because we need clean sky. Thank you, sir.
Honorable Wana.
No, thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, the member of the government, as an individual, because we need to understand what is the architecture. What the look of things in our country, the crime is very high. What the look of things, the communities of the people are very violent. When we take decisions on some of these issues, we could sit down and think nothing changes the resolution by heart. We must sit down and analyze. For instance, to me, I've got a problem when you amend because of an issue. You amend a law because of an issue.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a problem. Secondly,
chapter 15, you look at the issue, maybe because I'm coming from the working class, my background.
Honorable Chetty, can we have one meeting, please?
You look at the issue of chapter 15, where people are led to be gated, but they will be publicized in the media, in the TV. To me, it's a question, because police are the arm of the government at any given time. So, I'm not undermining the problems with artists, but everything this thing needed to be dig deeper so that we come to a decision as we make up, not to decide upon the emotion. Because if we can make a law to defend an individual, what is going to take place tomorrow or 10 years down the line, the individual is no more. I'm not going to have any, I'm just speaking to my own transparency and my own, as I said, dividing myself as an individual. So I cannot come up with a solution, and I'm saying this thing needs us to think a deep that it is currently, because both of them are implemented. Both of them are within the machinery of the government. Thank you.
Honourable Oliphant.
Yes, thank you. Sir, only got not more than two. The first one is when I go.
Honourable members, if we can be mindful of the time, let's be quick on our questions because we've got to conclude by 12, the next committee. The petition has got to commence at 12.
This girl is saying everything is being decided by the NA. NA can remove what. It doesn't say anything about NCOP. Now, because I belong to NCOP, where do I stand? Next. And my second one is you heard the lady the first person. When we talk about the first later as a committee, we must also think about the frustrations of the high-tech vis-a-vis at 8B. Because now other people will think that in the forces, in the iPad, in the NAP, that and get somebody, even the ballot can protect you. So, if we talk later, okay, to you now, I'm not you now, we must look at you.
Sorry.
We must think also the frustration of the iPad and not just, well, must not firstly, the whole procedure not to go on.
Dim Lord.
And because right now, it's very unfair. We must come and sit here. We only sit here to make the seats warm, and then so that we must be able to protect the teachings that are happening around us. Thank you, Chief.
Honorable Mukwege, I noted you by heart.
Thank you, Chair, for noting me by heart. It means I'm very much important in your life.
No, not in my life, in the revolution.
Yeah, revolution.
No, thanks, Chair. I'm not going to say much about the presentation itself, but rather to say, having listen to what the iPad has just said in terms of the time frame and being able to allow them as a interested party to the bill.
maybe we need to give them a chance where proper processes will then be unfolded. I'm suggesting, Chair, that we know the draft deal for now as a committee, and then I don't know whose responsibility is that to determine the extension of the public hearing, and then from there then we will then be able to maybe dwell further into the submissions that they have made, especially them, because the bill speaks directly to them as the primary people. So I think we will take it from there. So whoever that is responsible for the extension of time for public participation is us. I don't know, I'm not sure. I don't want to preempt. If it's us, let's then extend time, Chair, for public participation. And then from there, we will take it from there. Let's note this and then extend time, Chair.
Did you see Ms. Mind when you made your comment? I'm thinking of the Omotoso matter, where the defense has made an application that the sitting judge was too sympathetic to the witness. I think you are standing on that ground to be too sympathetic to IP.
No, I'm not sympathetic.
Okay.
I was not
necessarily. Okay, no, thanks. That was a nice comment.
This act, remember, is going to affect them, and they are carrying out of their mandate. It's going to concern them.
No, that was just on a lighter note.
Yeah, I know
you're
trying because I'm very much important.
I am advised, Mr. Prince, that the Constitutional Court, in its judgment, would have given a deadline for this piece of legislation to be finalized. If you want to comment on that quickly before the other members come in.
This matter was heard, I think, on the 5th of September 2016. The court gave 24 months. That deadline expired on the 6th or the 4th of September of this year. 5th of September this year.
Why are you
coming up?
We as Parliament have approached the court to ask for an extension of that deadline. My colleague is dealing with the extension process. We have not received a sit-down date from the Constitutional Court yet, but the matter is before the Constitutional Court to ask for an extension of that deadline.
Hey, we have a problem then.
No, we don't.
Can you give us, advise us legally?
Yeah.
What does this process mean? And why do we let us process this thing when there is a constitutional matter pending on the extension of the date? Do you want to come in, Mr. Chair? Just on this one, I remember, my apologies.
Thank you, Chairperson, if I may also ask just for some clarity as to the reason for the fact that it couldn't be finalized within the deadline. I mean, it's a 2-year deadline. It's not, the bill is honestly not rocket science. It took 2 years. If we can just have a reason for that, and also the legal implications. I mean, if the deadline was missed, what is the implication of processing the bill for us as a committee before the constitutional court has given the extension? I'm just scared we continue, and then in the end there's a, well, we have to adhere to the court order, but I mean, what is the implication for us processing it now, and what is the reason mainly for it being, for it taking so long? Usually the courts give a fairly lenient and liberal amount of time to process the legislation. So if we can just get clarity on that, I'm not comfortable with all of this.
Can you comment, wait, I will show you the deadline. What is the legal implication?
Yeah, maybe I'll take the first part. The actual part of how the extension works, my colleague will say the reason why we're only finalizing this bill now. The court gave Parliament 24 months to correct the defects in the legislation. The reason for the delay is in fact set out in the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee's filing affidavit to the Constitutional Court. I don't really want to delve too much in this. I'm going to be very broad and say that the chairperson alluded to the fact that there was, right at the beginning, there was mention of an executive bill that will come from the department to deal with this matter. Remember, this bill before the committee is a committee bill that was developed in the portfolio committee. The committee bill was developed on the 13th of August, was developed after the 16th of March of this year. Mm-hmm. It's only then that the portfolio committee decided that an executive bill will either not come in time or it will come, it won't come at all. And so by that time, the portfolio committee approached legal services and asked, is there anything that the committee can do in order to meet the deadline? We advised the committee that the committee could proceed with a committee bill. In order for them to do that, they had to get permission from the National Assembly to do so. That permission was given in April, and from there we decided the legislative process ensued to develop a committee bill. It was advertised in June. The committee had public hearings in June and July. And the 4th of September, until the 30th of July, on the 30th of July, the bill was effectively introduced into the National Assembly. So the legislative process in the portfolio committee was concluded. The bill was passed on the 4th of September 2018. There was an extended constituency period during that time. I think that's why the delay was, it was only passed on the 4th of September. As to why it is only referred to this committee now, Chair, I'm not able to comment on that. The issue of the extension?
But hold on, hold on. Can we allow the other gentleman to comment? If you, I will come back to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, the chronology of events as they took place in the NCOP in relation to this bill, as stated by my colleague,
the
National Assembly. The Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee in the National Assembly accepts to that extent in his affidavit, which he has filed with the Constitutional Court, explaining why it is that the bill took this long and the 24-month deadline which was given by the Constitutional Court has not been met. And I also just want to mention, Chairperson, to that extent, this is not the first bill where we have had to approach the Constitutional Court for an extension of the time period. Because the 24-month deadline assumes that it would be prioritized and probably the only one that the committee deals with, or the committee would be able within its schedule to deal with it within the given time. And practice is such that the 24-month deadline is difficult for committee members and committee to meet. To that extent, the speaker is an affidavit confirming what the chairperson of the portfolio committee on police has said are the reasons for this delay. There are currently two matters now before the Constitutional Court where we are seeking an extension of the deadline. By the 6th of November, which is Tuesday next week, we have set down a matter at the Constitutional Court where we will be heard on the application for extension of the time period to pass the restitution of members of the Members' Board. In that matter, again, because we have been given 24 months in which to pass legislation, but due to scheduling matters and other priorities in the National Assembly, there was a delay. We understand that the matter has not yet been referred to the NCOP, and the consultation in the NCOP has not ensued. So, Chairperson, that is the state of affairs. We have a precedent for the Constitutional Court extending. By nature, the decision of the Constitutional Court is supposed to be final. So forth, functions of issue. However, the court itself has said that in the interest of justice, it would allow Parliament to carry out its constitutional obligation of passing legislation and discharging its obligation or for facilitating effective public involvement. And therefore, to the extent that the court is being asked to extend the time period and given the specific time period that it must give an extension, the court is more amenable to allow such a situation.
Okay.
Thank you.
I have noticed Honorable K.P. Michalakis and Mukwili, Doctor yourself, please, just on this matter of the extension and what you think should be done by the committee members. Chairperson?
I'm happy.
Okay. Michalakis?
Thank you, Chairperson. From what I gathered in the explanation, the portfolio committee sat on this for a year, trying to figure out between the executive and the portfolio committee who had to do this bill for a year. While most probably the constitutional court order gave Parliament the job to finalise this legislation. So for a year, nothing happened, just trying to figure out who's gotten this thing where between the executive and Parliament. That's completely unacceptable in the first place. In the second place, did you apply to the Constitutional Court for extension before the deadline expired? Because if you apply for the deadline, for an extension of the deadline after it expires, we are actually as Parliament in contempt of court. Normally, you see I'm going to miss the deadline in 6 months' time, and then you start applying for an extension already. Why was that procedure not followed? Chairperson, I think this is honestly, it's very serious, firstly, because being in contempt of the Constitutional Court is absolutely unacceptable, especially if you follow it. I want clarity on when you applied for extension to the Constitutional Court, and I think also that we need to, as a committee, take this up with the chairperson of the council to say that we can't have this tendency where the Constitutional Court gives Parliament 24 months, they apply late for extension, and they sit on a bill for a year doing absolutely nothing, and then obviously Parliament would struggle to get it through in 24 months, because if you sit on your hands for 20 of the 24 months, you're not going to come to legislation. For legislation like this, 2 years is, in my opinion, more than enough to get it through Parliament. It takes 6 weeks to get it through the NTOP. So, Chairperson, I think we need to take it up, but I would like clarity on when exactly did you approach the Constitutional Court for extension, because if it was after September of this year,
thank
we
you.
As Parliament are in contempt of the Constitutional Court,
thank
then
you.
Someone needs to take responsibility.
Mukwili?
No, I think Honorable Michalaika covered me to say it's really unacceptable for us to do.
But don't repeat it when you covered you. We've got
yeah.
time pressure. Who was not at the same doctor yourself, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, over to you.
Thank you. Chairperson, thank you very much. On the logistics matter, some covered. The bill, the essence of this bill, I agree with those who say, let us have a comprehensive amendment so that the services or mandate of this organ can proceed.
Doctor, please don't
yes.
pronounce yourself on the resolution of the committee.
Why must the bill have a name of a person? I thought we legislate on concept.
No, it's a case law that they're making reference to. It's not the actual thing. Okay. Can you respond to those questions quickly, Chief? Yeah, you can. But please be short in your response.
Very short,
yeah.
Not to kick it for tax, but the first one was directed at the portfolio committee to ask why the bill has taken so long. Here, we don't sit in the portfolio committee, so we wouldn't have been party to that process. The only time we became aware of the bill is when the committee approached us and asked in March, like I said, is there a need for a bill? So I wouldn't be able to answer the question about why the portfolio committee took so long on the bill.
And just to also mention, Chairperson, that the portfolio, as I mentioned, the portfolio committee chairperson is on affidavit, which is a public document now, which could be shared with the committee, and the committee can read itself what reasons have been forwarded by the chairperson as a reason for the delay. With regard to when the matter was sent to the Constitutional Court, it was certainly referred to the Constitutional Court before the deadline, otherwise we have been in contempt and we have a member in no doubt. I unfortunately, Chairperson, I don't have the copy of the papers in front of me, and I cannot take it all off the top of my head, give the exact date. But certainly it was refined before.
No, query, order, please.
Yeah, but certainly it was before the due date. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yes,
Honorable
Defense. Hold on.
I want to hear about the LA and the MCU.
Honorable Oliphant, now we're dealing with this issue of that which has got an impact on everything in terms of content of this speech.
No.
We're dealing with a matter.
I don't know who's the
It's me. Thank you.
Cash?
Hold on, Teddy. Order, please. Cash, do you want to comment on the implication of this now on our processes? No, Honorable Nkwili. Allow me to suppress you this time around. Please. Honorable Nkwili, allow me to suppress you, please. Please. Can you comment on the implication of the process if we were to put this thing on hold on ice as this committee, because now there's this court application and there's a lot of other issues that are, and we've already went on public to call for public comment. Comment, please.
Chairperson, the matter was referred to the committee for consideration and report, so it was in the purview of the committee to extend any deadline that they wish to impose on in terms of public submission. But the parliamentary legal advisors have explained that it's a precedent that has been set, so they are in the process of extending the deadline. So I would suggest that we don't report until that deadline has come to us. But at the same time, we can continue with our processes in terms of public submissions and consideration of the matter.
Okay. Honourable members, I think now we put everything in terms of the discussion or the deliberation on this particular bill on hold, and we allow this process to unfold. Ne?
Please.
Say again.
No, Chairperson, the deadline, just on that issue for suspending this bill, the deadline as put by the Constitutional Court stands, that Parliament must pass this bill. And until such time that the Constitutional Court has given direction either in favour of extension or not, the committee, it will be in the best interest of the committee to continue proceeding.
No. Can we, hold on, members, can I make a ruling from the chair? Can I make the ruling from the chair? Yes. Can I allow him to first? We are dominating this meeting, Mkwile. I have a problem.
Thank you, Chair. I think, Chair, for now, we have finalized the matter. Let's allow the process to take place accordingly, as we have discussed. Let's get the information from the that document from the committee, that affidavit stating those reasons, and also bearing in mind that the ICC must make their own submission so that they can do their work freely without any fear of it. Thank you very much.
No, I wanted to check who advises, because the legal team is saying the matter came to them when there was a time to deal with the bill. They are not sitting at committee, so they might not know. So I want to check who advises committee, because I understand in all committees we have legal advisors. Maybe when there are issues that need legal intervention, there is a person that sits with us in a committee that gives us to say, look, as a committee, there is this matter that is before you that needs your attention. Legally, we must do 1, 2, 3, 4. So I don't understand. That's my question. And then we'll be done. If I can just take that process of the legal people that sit with us and the parliamentary legal department, how does it function? I'm sorry, don't look at me like that.
The problem is, my worry is that we are taking us back. Honourable members, can we agree that we suspend our processes on this bill as a committee? Allow the Constitutional Court to pronounce on itself, on it, then we shall consider the extension on the public comments and other submissions after the personal court shall have pronounced itself, whether it's excelled or not. Is that agreed to, Honourable Member? Thank you very much. Can we then close it? Do you want to comment?
I don't really want to influence the decision. Suffice to say, Chair, that this is a legislative process that's in front of the committee. It has started, unfortunately, late in the NCO, in the NA.
Please hold on. Nothing much back. Switch off the mic. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Can we proceed to the next item? The infrastructure, the critical infrastructure protection bill. I'm going to allow civilian secretary to comment first. Over to you. What is that? Point of order.
Sorry, Chairperson, my apologies. I just want clarity with regards to the point on the agenda. From what I understand it, the only question before the committee at this stage would be if the written comments that we received were sufficient, or are we going to deliberate specifically on the bill today as well? Because from what I understand, it's only whether the submissions were sufficient. Because if that's not the case, I would request at least from our side a bit more time for us to go through these and to actually come to an informed state and to deliberate on that. But I see from you shaking your hands, your head, that we're only going to consider whether the public submissions were sufficient. If that's the correct understanding. Thank you, Chair.
Civilian Secretary.
Thank you, Chair. I'm speaking on behalf of the Civilian Secretariat today. In terms of your instructions on why the bill is urgent, this is typically something that is affecting the whole country in terms of the national key points at the moment. And I think the recent horrible incident here at Parliament demonstrates the need for security at the institution. And this bill was very, very well debated in the portfolio committee, and lots of submissions were served there. And I think the only outstanding issue really in terms of this bill from our perspective is twofold. The one from the Banking Association. Firstly, the Banking Association has some concerns about certain provisions in the bill regarding the cyber crime and cyber security. That bill is now discussed in the portfolio committee, the regular portfolio committee. All the references to critical information infrastructure were taken out, so there will be a proposal from the department side on amending some of the provisions in the bill to take out references to critical information infrastructure. Secondly, the two most important other submissions really come from two sources. Of course, is South African National Heritage Forum, others, as well as Mongolia. Both of these institutions made submissions in the portfolio committee, and those submissions were very important because they really shaped a lot of the amendments that the portfolio committee made to the bill. So the proposals were considered important, but also proposals regarding to the critical relates to the public interest effect. And Parliament took the legal opinion on that. In terms of that legal opinion, the proposal was made to amend once again the censor section, which it was done, and I think we now have a censor section that is really in line with the Constitution. The reason for the submission and the public interest defense that they want to build in there is to say that if a journalist provides information or takes photographs of security measures and it's in the public interest, for instance, to expose corruption, that they may do so. But there are good reasons why that is
also dangerous. On the other hand, chairperson, if I would just use a quick example of the reserve bank, which is a national key concept of ours. If a person who can walk in there, take photographs of the security measures, publish it, say, I thought it was in the public interest for that to be done and it's very terrible. So very shortly, that's our submission chair, and if you so direct, we will have a more full document available after the meeting for the committee separately that encapsulates everything in the system. That's perfectly secure. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Honourable members, we've got 10 minutes to comment on this issue on the public comment on this particular bill. But the processes are unfolding well. I think the closing date for public comments have come and gone. Can we have comments? Yes, Honourable Chetty.
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't know whether it's a compliment to Honourable Chetty or an insult to me, you calling me Honourable Chetty. Not a nice note. But, Chairperson, I just quickly want to make sure. The inclusion of some of these comments, obviously that happened after the public comment process, or that happened during the public comment process in the portfolio committee process. And some of them, from what I understand, were then included in the draft that eventually came to the NTOP. Is it only those two specific amendments that you mentioned, the ones, I suppose it's the AMA Mungane and the Banking Association of South Africa? Are there those two that were included? Are there others that were also included? Because we sit with submissions of one, two, three organizations before us. The other one is Sunnet as well. Which of these have eventually found their way into the bill before it came to us? And then just clarity from Gershwin himself, if I may ask, Chair, the process that we followed as a committee to open up for public comments, what process was followed over there and at what stage is it now? Thank you.
Any other member? None. Thank you. Back to you, sir.
Thank you, sir. Yes, this bill was very consulted even before it was introduced into Parliament. And then during that process, there was an opportunity to obviously submit submissions. That the date for that was also extended. I can't remember the exact amount of organizations or bodies who commented, but there was a substantial comment and debate on the contents of the bill. A lot of the bill has changed, but the present commentators also had an opportunity during that process. And as I said, only with the Banking Council, circumstances in other legislation, draft legislation before Parliament have changed, which is why we will propose some amendments. Just to make sure that we also align it with other legislation. But the two main bodies who commented on this made very substantial and very good comments during the previous round, and most of that was included. I think the only issue that is really outstanding at the moment is the public interest effect that these organizations want to include. But from the department's point of view, that is, if you look at section 173 of the Constitution, I think that to extend the common law is a function of the courts. And I think to include that public interest defense into a very, very limited offensive section here, because remember, these offenses can only be committed in terms of security measures that are needed, not even security measures that are visible to the public or in the public domain. So it's a very, very limited effect, which is the reason why the Department of the Review, but
you can be short, please.
Yes, that is also constitutional. Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Okay.
Yes, Chairperson, it's a Section 75 bill, Chairperson, so we limited our scope to advertising in all national newspapers in all official languages and on electronic media, Chairperson. We did not send it to provinces, but the bill through the speakers, through the Chairperson of the Council's office, is always sent to the legislature, Chairperson. So they do have purview of it, but we didn't specifically request any comments from them on it.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to add, Chairperson, that at the portfolio committee stage, the organizations that have submitted on the bill now, as colleagues from this panel have noted, necessitated, after some amendments were made in line with the propositions from the organization, just on the aspect of public interest defense, it necessitated Parliament to approach a senior counsel, Advocate Wim Brandenburg, to seek a legal opinion to answer specifically that question. So the portfolio committee was then furnished with that legal opinion. I just wanted to just add a information question, if it would be wise for us to share that opinion with the members so that they can also consider the submission in context of the legal opinion provided to the
portfolio. Okay. Thank you. I think it would be important that you benefit us with that legal opinion. But as we look at that, I'm missing in your response the part that says substantively these submissions from these three organizations are the same as the submissions that were submitted in the portfolio committee, or are they something new?
Chairperson, there were other submissions from these organizations also, but the submissions before this committee are matters that the portfolio committee does not include as they went through the book. So these are still
the same.
In essence the same that were made to the portfolio.
Okay then. Another members, can we note the comments from civilian secretariat? And we shall then bring back the bill for deliberation by the committee, given the request by other members in the committee. Are we fine with that?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Can we then deal with the last item on the adoption of the minutes of the 17th, of the 12th of September and 17th? October, please. The first set is 12th September. Any comment on page 1? Page 2? Page 3? Page 4? Any comment? None. Do I have a mover for the adoption?
Chairperson, I move the adoption of the minutes.
Honorable Oliphant wanted to second.
I second.
Thank you very much. Therefore, the minutes are duly adopted. The second set is the set dated 17th October 2018. Page 1. Honorable Mokwili.
Thank you, Chair. I don't know whether it's relevant, but I think
You may please sit for a minute because you are stepping now. And we may not be sympathetic with you.
The participation of... I don't know how it affects the running of the committee, but it's with concern that the participation of Honorable Mohati in the committee, I know that it has been reported that he's sick, but I think we, as a committee, we need to have a way forward on his membership in the committee or on his participation. Maybe we need to deploy someone or some members to check whether Honorable Mohati will he be able to participate, because in a real sense his participation is worrying, anything like that. So I'm suggesting, Chair, I don't know whether this is a relevant platform to suggest this or what.
Because
it's almost 5 or 6 months now
Thank you, Honorable Mkulu. We can only note your comment, and I must make a comment from the chair that matter is not within our purview as a committee. The whip of the committee ordinarily would have dealt with that matter in consultation with the chief whip of the institution. And we shall be accordingly informed as a committee. But naturally, when a member is absent, then an alternate comes in that case, and I want to believe the Free State is represented by Honorable Mukhala. Well, I don't know. Thank you very much. Honorable members, then the meeting stands. Oh, the
second set of
members. Yeah, can you please move the Honorable Oliphant?
Sir, I move for the minutes of the trade. I second for the minutes of the trade.
Move.
Second.
No, there was
the second set of
it. Yeah, you must move because there was no mover.
Oh, I move second.
Okay, thank you.
71.
Thank you. Dr. Matime, second. Thank you very much. Honourable members, the meeting stands adjourned.
Thank you very much.
Honourable members, thank you. But the technician is coming now, only 5 minutes.
Yeah.
5 minutes, yeah. 5 minutes,